Welcome to the Green Data Center Podcast, Season 4, Episode 5. Please like and subscribe. Plus, also give us feedback on the website at greendatacenterman.com. That lets us know some of the things that you like or might want to hear more about. On the website, you can also see a lot of the events that are upcoming. It feels like we're constantly fussing with the webpage, but we have added a few things and we are updating those events. So hopefully we'll see some more people out there getting in touch with one another and meeting face-to-face again. There are also links to courses on data centers called Data Center Essentials, and we start with the general. We talked last time about some of those general items, but we also power and electrical and mechanical and cooling, so check those out if you're just launching into your data center career. The links on the website are the cheapest way to get them, so please use those if you're going to go ahead and sign up. And let us know if you have any questions about that or anything else. All right, in the news, where do we start? There's a whole lot of things going on. Let's start with Vantage. So Vantage has been building data centers in Northern Virginia area for quite some time. Their string of construction will continue as they look to have a 96 megawatt campus that's going to start construction, and they keep going with one data center after another on their properties. Now, this campus is in Sterling, Virginia, not too far from where they are already at. And if you know the Northern Virginia area, you can see a lot of their data centers right from the major roadways throughout Northern Virginia. Some of the things that you might not be able to see is that they do have stacked generators at least one of their data centers. And this was something that has been done in order to save on space. The amount that they paid for their space in Sterling, Virginia, where their second campus is going to be in Northern Virginia, it was $46 million for 17 acres. So a little quick math on the back of the hand, and that's $2 point something million an acre. Yeah, it's getting expensive around Northern Virginia. Now, that might not seem much, especially when you're talking about like urban costs, that kind of thing. But that amount of cost has gone up significantly. And whenever we're talking about this being the hub of the internet, where so many data centers are located, it's the number one data center market in the world, the costs are starting to go up, and that cost is going to be worthwhile. Now, Vantage paid for that property about a year ago, and they've been sitting on it and proposing some things. So we're likely to see a nice, innovative campus in Sterling, and that's going to probably come with a lot of stipulations as the local market is starting to push back on what data centers are and how they look like. Also is going to be the sound and what their operations are, whether they're generators or fans and everything else that goes with them. How are they going to be more of a community team player and be nice to look at as well as to be around? So to couple with that, we're probably going to see some of the new things that are coming out of Loudoun County, Virginia, home of the data centers in Northern Virginia. And Loudoun County is pushing to have at least 30% of the outside appearance to be among several different materials, but to make it more aesthetically pleasing. So you might see some metal panel with different colors, those kinds of things, in order to make sure that it looks good, not just operates well. So if you're looking at this from that green data center type of perspective, it's not necessarily doing anything for you on that end. However, it's going to be much better as far as the community and the operation. So if you start to look at how it can be a better partner with the community, and that data center itself is going to operate more quietly or look better than, say, a just giant warehouse full of machines, it's probably going to go over well with the county as well as be a longer sustainable type of data center. Now, of course, it's not just what you can do and what land you can grab and develop in Northern Virginia. In other news, 1547, if you don't know about 1547 Realty, they have been a longtime leader in the development and operations and owner of data centers throughout North America and Europe. They're developing a parcel of land over 100 acres outside of Philadelphia. So they are launching into that market. And with that, they're going to develop this with about 150 megawatts available, and then adding another 140, so 290, approaching 300 megawatts for that total build out on that land for data centers. Now, they've already cleared a lot of the hurdles with the zoning and everything to go ahead and develop 2 million square feet of data center on those lots. And what they can look at is next door is picking up the adjacent property to build another 5 million square feet of data centers. Now, if you think of where that's situated, and you can take a look at the map, what they're serving is a lot of the areas that are outside of New York City and Philadelphia, but also where those hyperscalers want to get a little bit closer to those major cities along that metropolitan sort of throughway between Philadelphia and Boston. So if you think of New York City as being the major metropolitan hub that they're serving, they're helping with, all those Fortune 500 companies and large hyperscalers can meet in this campus. They've probably got a really good deal and can grow it. And then I don't know how much they're getting as far as the tax incentives and other things that they might be getting out of this particular property, but it's probably in their favor to really help this campus grow quickly. So everything that they save, they're going to pass on in that price reduction for whichever customers decide to go into those data centers. If Philadelphia doesn't really strike you as a major data center market, well, think of that whole metropolitan area as actually being a robust hub for data centers. From Delaware to the south, and then south New Jersey, and then Philadelphia and Pennsylvania itself, a lot of those Fortune 500s will show up there. And if you think about some of the old names like SunGard and others, they have a number of facilities and buildings they built up over time and just kept going from year to year to be more robust and add more equipment and IT services. Now, the nice thing also that 1547 is looking to do is provide for towers, and they can land the towers to help them grow immediately. And that way, they don't necessarily need to worry about the data center owners or operators showing up into that particular space immediately. And if it takes a while to develop and for them to show up and move out of, say, some of their older data centers and their aging ones that are across that Philadelphia region, that's perfectly fine with them as they can build out that tower support and then have that as the means to support the rest of that data center growth. Okay, let's move on to Ohio, and specifically Columbus, Ohio, because it is becoming another internet data center hub. A lot of data center companies are there, a lot of hyperscalers are already there and launching more facilities. And that includes expansions by some of the people that are already there. Cologix, for example, just announced that they're going to have another expansion of 30-some megawatts. But the real elephant is Intel, and that's where they're looking to have their chip fab developed and built there. And we're talking $20 billion of a semiconductor fabrication plant in Columbus, Ohio, right near all of these other data centers. And they are looking for 7,000 workers just to do the construction, let alone the operations of that facility once it's complete. So even though it's not a data center, let's take a moment and talk about that a little bit, because it does impact the data center market. If you can land that chip fab right there, suddenly it's going to impact a lot of how the data centers are going to look at some of the things that they're doing. And that chip factory being there on that 1,000-acre site, and it's not coming for a little bit, but it's certainly going to help with the rest of the data centers landing, and we might see that continued growth across Columbus, Ohio. And if you think about the construction timeline of that chip fab and all these other data centers hoping to get built during that period of time also, suddenly we have an overlap of a lot of construction projects happening at the same time in Columbus, Ohio, not exactly known for having a huge population. Add on to it that the data centers and the skill sets for building data centers and getting them up quickly is the same sort of skill sets that the chip fab is probably looking to do for Intel. So that same type of construction skills relate directly from data center to chip fabrication. And we're talking about that construction being 2, 3, 4 years in order to get those chip fab plants up and operating. We're also going to see a lot of other infrastructure go up, and that includes everything from, you know, the hotels to restaurants to everything else that goes along with that to complement all of that construction. Now, if you have Google landing their data center and others landing their data center and a lot of investors with real estate landing their data centers hoping to get co-location or to get wholesale or to offer some of those hyperscalers a data center, suddenly you have a lot of competition on your hands and a lot of money starts to come invested in figuring out where to land the next data center. Now, that type of news travels nationwide, travels worldwide, and that means we might have a lot of people moving from, say, one location to another. So you might see some people not necessarily leave Northern Virginia, but definitely other markets to go ahead and build those data centers that need to go up at the same time as this chip fab plant. Now, add on that others are starting to just say, well, we know where that Intel chip fab plant is going. Let's go ahead and land right next to it. And that's what DBT Development Group is doing also. So if you know them, they've been around and they're a real estate development company looking at developing Loudoun County in Virginia, mostly for the data center market there. And others in the area, such as Lincoln Property Company and Harrison Street, have broken ground on an adjacent site. So they've got a site that's, again, adjacent to that Intel chip fab site, and they're going to go ahead and surge forward to try to put in their data centers and get them up and operational so they don't run into any sort of construction delays from that chip fab plant taking all the workers, materials, everything else in order to develop that. So what they're looking at is probably going to satisfy the market for a little bit of time in case that chip fab plant does interrupt a lot of this other construction. They're hoping to get up about 1.2 million square feet eventually, but they're having the first buildings come online in 2023. So they can probably achieve that, not run into any delays or any sort of construction mishaps with their neighbor, and get that go ahead and get that operational and bring online the first megawatts. And they're looking to have 144 megawatts total by the time they're done. So if they can do that, they're going to go ahead and provide the market, including, say, Meta and Google and others. And they can go ahead and provide for all those hyperscalers as well as others that might be able to move in. They're probably going to be well off for the future, at least until that chip fab is mostly complete. One of the others that did break ground rather recently was Google, and they actually probably had a good inkling of what was coming in that area. So they went ahead and tried to break ground even earlier, and they're going to build their 150,000 square foot data center, and they're going to spend about $300 million to do it in that same area, in that Columbus, Ohio area. So the way that Google does their data centers is a little bit more hefty, so they're probably not going to complete until 2025 at the earliest. They tend to go a little bit more slowly on a lot of how their facilities are done. So they are actually, I think their schedule even says by the end of 2025, it will be fully completed and they'll employ 20 people. So that number might be small, but just to kind of reiterate, like a lot of the economic development teams will look at that and say, well, it's not about how many people they're employing, it's about how many dollars that the overall facility can go ahead and add revenue to the particular county or the site. And that's what's really attractive about data centers. It's not that only 20 people are working there and you're not even getting the construction jobs that are continuous necessarily. It's the amount of revenue that can be built up over time. And that's where the incentives really are worked out and where they come from. Anyway, one of the things that they were looking at is how do they go ahead and try to build a little bit faster. And one of the things that they did is they launched a little bit faster, buying the site and moving on that. But they got a lot of opposition, and they have a agreement with a good neighbor agreement with the Columbus area. And with that, about one third of that farmland is going to remain as green space. So a lot of that developing land or developed land is actually being depicted to stay as farmland as opposed to being developed for data centers or other use. The pushback on this particular site was based on the historic nature of it, and it drew the opposition from the neighborhoods that were around it because they wanted to preserve this as a landmark. And it's a historical landmark for snake oil. So if you think about what snake oil was, it's a miracle cure. And it was called Peruna, and it was in the late 1800s and even in the beginning of the 1900s. So you were talking about, they would say it would cure all sorts of ailments, just like a lot of snake oils would. So this preservation society was trying to keep as much of that particular land and site as they could. So that's what Google ended up negotiating and agreeing to overall in order to go ahead and move on this particular property. All right, let's launch into talking about Ireland and Dublin. There has been a lot of pushback in Dublin, and it's not due to a lot of the protests or some of the politics that go along with that. There's a lot of concerns about the actual grid that can support data centers in Dublin. Now, Dublin's seen a lot of environmentalists and others saying, hey, this is too much. The development of the data centers here is going to be too much for our localized area. The politicians, of course, had heard a while back, this has been an ongoing issue for well over a year now, and it's been growing from environmental groups even a decade ago, and they are getting consolidated and starting to lead the charge against development of data centers near Dublin. But that wasn't really necessarily the limiter. As was reported in a couple different places, Iargrid, the local utility for Dublin and really all of Ireland, they have said they cannot provide the power that a lot of these data centers are requesting. Based on what they were looking at, they were even saying that they couldn't approve anything in the Dublin area, at least for expansion on a lot of the data centers that are there until 2028. And that effectively kills a lot of development that are, many people were looking at. So if you even think about the subsidiary that Digital Realty has that was looking at expanding there and adding two 20-megawatt data centers, we're talking 40 megawatts for data centers to add to the area, there was a lot of pushback there. And it wasn't just, again, the environmentals. It was, we can't get you the power that you're requesting. Now, this isn't necessarily a new issue, but we are talking about 40 megawatts, and a lot of people might scoff at that. Probably shouldn't, but realize that the 40 megawatts in a lot of these areas is a major haul, especially when you need to provide all that infrastructure. But if you're in London or Paris, you're probably not looking at that as a major deal. But other places like Amsterdam, Frankfurt probably doesn't have a problem. But Northern Virginia, there's a lot of substations that are landing that are 300 megawatts that are going to provide for a lot of data centers in the area. And it's not a major deal to add 40 megawatts here or there, or even swap out 40 megawatts as temporary power for a specific data center until more permanent power can come online. Now, I'm not trying to make light of this at all. What I am getting at is that the overall Ireland grid is going to hit a certain pressure, and they're looking at where do we provide these data centers versus other facilities that are also looking to come online. So they are also looking at, multi-million dollar expansions throughout Ireland, depending on when these different data centers might be arriving. And that includes all the infrastructure that goes with that. And it's more complex than just saying, let's just free up 40 megawatts for these couple of data centers here and there. That adds up, and it adds up very quickly. And suddenly you run out of where you can provide that power and how much at particular times, given that there is excessive demand for not just data centers, but a lot of growth across Dublin and Ireland. So what we're getting at is there is a disproportionate amount of data center and data center energy requests compared to some of the other industries. So Ireland is carefully gauging this, and this is where the political pushback has come. And because of that, the grid systems are going ahead and pausing on a lot of that effectively, as mentioned, until 2028 before they're looking at a major data center refresher, saying that they're going to be able to support the next, hundreds of megawatts of data center that can approach the Dublin area. So this is going to lead to a moratorium that's sort of forced as the politicians and the energy grid and everyone try to figure out what is that going to mean for Ireland going into the near future. They're going to figure it out for the long future because I think that they want to compete with the other major cities such as London, and it works out really well for them to be that next data center hub if they can go ahead and figure out what they want to do and make sure that they can happen. They're poised to start to develop a lot of that, but in the meantime, in the short term, there is going to be more of that electricity and power crunch that they just are not going to be able to support the data centers that do land there and get built over the next year or so. Now, because Ireland is seeing this crunch on their energy use, they are already asking, or considering to ask, I should say, the data center companies to use their emergency generators for periods of time during the winter. So there is a restriction that they might see where they might have blackouts or just brownouts that they might see. And because of that, it's going to be critical for the people to have their electricity operating to keep their heat and everything else going. And because of that, the data centers want to keep going as well. So maybe they can switch over for a prolonged period of time to generator operation. Now, a lot of that pressure has come from Russia and their invasion of Ukraine and a lot of that energy instability across Europe. Because of that, there has been a number of deliveries and such that have not met Ireland's needs. And because of that, they're looking at that overall depiction across the winter to say, well, let's go ahead and ask our big energy users. And again, not just data centers, but the Commission of Regulation and Utilities in Ireland, they basically said, this is what's going on and where we're landing. And guess what? Data centers have around 17% of the energy use of Ireland last year. So we need to go ahead and ask them, as those big energy users, to go ahead and take themselves off the grid for a period of time. Now, they have had in 2022 already had to shut down several power plants just because they do not have the supply that was supposed to be delivered. And because of that, they've come up with a warning system that they've had in place for a while, but they've issued 8 such warnings this year alone so far. And that means that warning means that they're not going to meet the demands of the electrical grid that's been placed on it. So they're just very concerned of where that's going to be throughout the winter of 2022 to 2023. So we're probably going to see some more warnings as well as possible lulls, brownouts, and blackouts in some areas. Now, given all these warnings and all of this happening, as a data center operator or builder, you can just look at this and say, well, this means it's a risk in order to build in Dublin. If we are going to go ahead and build and operate in Dublin and Ireland as a whole, well, we're going to run the risk of running out of power at some point. Does that mean I need to go ahead and plan on having my data centers operate for a prolonged period of time, days at a time, operating on generator power? And where are we going to get our fuel? Just like a lot of places, a lot of islands, you have to get your fuel from somewhere, and often it's imported. So if you're going to go ahead and import your oil or your gasoline or, you know, your diesel, you need to go ahead and figure all of that out and probably keep a lot more of that fuel oil supplied to your data center, because you know that you're going to have multiple outages probably back to back across a summer or winter period where they're just having lulls in wind power or lulls in their delivery and they can't have their power plants online. Now, Ireland is also pushing for a lot of renewables across their grid to come online. So they're gauging that they want about 80% to come from renewables by 2030. So we have 7+ years in order to get there for that. In the meantime, there's a lot of data center companies that said, well, we want to build there. So over 30 data centers that were originally planned for Dublin in order to make it a major hub have, they went on hold or canceled. People have made other plans to put the data centers elsewhere because of these power issues. And those 30 plus data centers would have brought that total power around Dublin to go ahead and consume about from 17% up to 28% of the total power off the grid. So last year at this time, there were about applications for 2 gigawatts of data centers, but they had approved of about 1.8 gigawatts, and that's 1,800 megawatts, by the way. Yeah, a considerable amount of capacity to go ahead and be brought online. However, because of all these power issues, you know, you suddenly are looking at that and saying, well, we just can't do it. And effectively, everything has been canceled. And that was, again, last year, last November. So we're still in that holding pattern to see what's going to happen with a lot of these data center properties and projects. But overall, it does not look like Ireland's going to be developing in much the same way that it could before. I also wanted to cover, before you missed it, that there is going to be a space-based data center. If you missed that, there's a group called Orbit's Edge that is going to have a compact rack design, and they're going to launch it into space. And they're working with Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, which is going to basically put together this high-performance computing. They're calling it a data center, and compact that as much as possible, and then send it into space into a low-Earth orbit. So you might say, like I did, okay, cool, but why? And one of the big reasons is that there's a lot of data getting collected from all these satellites and all these other things that are up there. If you've ever seen how much clutter there is in orbit around the Earth, you'll know that there's a lot of satellites collecting a lot of data, but they are sending it down. And right now, there is a bottleneck. So if there's certain processes that can be done in space before they're sent down from these older satellites, and they can go ahead and send it instead to this one and have it process there and then send information back to the satellite, it can skip a step, so to speak, or save a little bit of time instead of trying to transmit back and forth. And therefore, they can process a lot of those loads and a lot of that information and data that's collected a little bit faster and a little bit more easily than a lot of the Earth-based data centers are waiting until everything downloads before they go ahead and do some computing to re-upload some new commands to that satellite. So in many ways, this first one that's going to go up, and there's no set date quite yet, but it's more of a proof of concept about what can be done. And what they are also looking at is transmitting data back and forth to Earth. So because of that, they could handle, if there's extra, you know, capacity, they could also handle some of that data processing that you might look at like a normal data center could do, but they could do it in space. So you transmit something that you might not have the connectivity for from Earth, and then you go ahead and transmit it to space, have it digested, do whatever you need to do with it, and then transmit it back. So that all that can be done in that one satellite that Orbit's Edge is running. Now, you can take a look at what that is actually means as far as that hardware. We're talking about a volume of about 5U of hardware, and they're talking about a 18-inch deep hardware set, and that they are going to expand eventually to 36-inch deep hardware. And what that means is they're compacting everything as they possibly can to allow this data center, this actually small-sized rack, inside of that satellite, shoot it to space, and then have it operate efficiently there. And they're going to have it basically do a lot of production. We will see what that's going to be, but those numbers aren't out quite yet on how much they can process, what kind of loads they can handle, that kind of thing. But I was thinking a lot about the James Webb telescope and how that provides so much information. And the detailed pictures that come from that are stitched together. And if you have something that can go ahead and provide a lot of that stitching or a lot of that processing power that is more close, relatively, in space to what's being provided, then maybe there's a way that we can look to just do all that processing there, stitch everything together before sending it back to Earth so that we can view it and don't have to stitch it together here or try to do any processing. So we'll see what comes of that in that proof of concept. I'm also interested in how it's cooled. I have not found out quite yet how that mini data center is cooled, but maybe it doesn't need to worry about it, and I need to do some more research on how a lot of other satellites are cooled anyway. Now, overall, that is going to operate in its own vacuum, of course, but how is it going to operate lights out? Well, a lot of facilities are lights out. Let's see how they behave without anyone touching them, interfering with them, messing with them, opening them up, or playing with them at all. So that's how that's probably going to play out, and that means it's probably not just a precursor for a lot of the data centers that are going to be in space, but data centers overall that don't need to be touched, that they can go ahead and just be stood up and start to operate the entire facility. And a lot of those aspects can be just stood up and let to run without having to go in and replace or repair that often at all. We're seeing this play out in those containerized data centers where they're sunk into the ocean or they're just bottled up in a certain space and nobody needs to touch them. They have the power, they have their cooling systems that operate continuously, and then, you know, they have their connectivity and you don't need to have anyone go in and check on anything. And even if you start to lose some of those servers themselves, then you can just monitor that from the outside to say, well, once we have a 5% loss or 10% loss or whatever the loss is on the amount of servers that you have or there's certain pieces of hardware, those failures might come about more or less rapidly. But the idea is that you can watch that from afar and realize that you're going to have that much loss of capacity on those particular servers across that containerized data center. And just accept that and figure out when is the appropriate time where we go ahead and bring it up from the ocean or bring it back from space, or if it's just here on the surface, when do we finally open the doors and start to do the repairs. So that to me is that proof of concept that it is working. It's certainly possible. We just need to figure out what our losses are and when we need to actually open that lights out, people-less, everything-less data center. All right, this is season 4, episode 5 of the Green Data Center podcast. Again, let us know if you have any feedback, but we enjoy the likes, we enjoy any of the mentions. And again, give us that feedback. We're really looking forward to having a conversation here and elsewhere. Check out the greendatacenterman.com site, and you can see some of the events that are upcoming, including the iMasons Awards that are going to be happening in October, as well as some of the other events that are going to be in person. One more time, we have links to the Data Center Essentials courses, and they have the deep discounts from clicking on the links there. So if you're just launching into the data center career, that's the way to go to really understand what the mechanical or the electrical systems, or just in general, what a data center looks like. Until next time, we're looking forward to your questions.